It's like the saying goes, who needs a chainsaw when you've got a backhoe? I promise that's not dirty. This is the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast for Monday, the 27th of March, 2023. I am your host, Ken Ray, joined today by Jeff Butts, managing editor of the Mac Observer. Happy Monday to you, sir.
Happy Monday to you.
Second part of today's show, Jerry, Brian, and Charles have tossed a few thoughts into the mailbag. We will hit those in a bit. First, though, my Sunday morning was filled with uncertainty and doubt around something that almost nobody has seen. It was kind of neat that they almost seem to be working in tandem. Not that I'm accusing anybody of anything. But on Sunday, the New York Times ran a lengthy piece on turmoil inside of Apple tied to the mixed reality headset that they say they expect to come out in June. And then Mark Gurman over at his Power On newsletter at Bloomberg also talked about a certain amount of uncertainty around the headset, which he says is coming out in June. Yeah, I know.
So from one coast to another, they're colluding on their criticism.
Is he? Well, Bloomberg's in New York, but is he in California?
Yeah, Gurman is in California.
All right. Yeah, it was pages and pages. I don't really think they're colluding, by the way. There were similarities in the stories, and one of them that was brought up in both stories we'll get to, I personally found it interesting, but it was pages and pages and pages about the high price, the relatively small number of first-round units expected to be sold. Johnny Ive leaving 4 years ago got thrown into the New York Times piece. And that rare dissent inside Apple over the anticipated product. Now, the New York Times piece was mostly citing 8 unnamed former or current employees of Apple. So we don't know what department they used to be in. We don't know the department they're in now. We don't know how many of them are former versus how many of them are current. Just 8 people that, you know, at one time or another did have access to the big round building. Which I guess, you know, depending on how many years ago, there might not have been one, actually. But anyway, right. 5 years ago, the New York Times piece said Johnny Ive showed a video to Apple's 100 top executives illustrating what a good augmented reality device could do. Flash forward to now, according to the New York Times piece, as the company prepares to introduce the headset in June, enthusiasm at Apple has given way to skepticism, said the 8 current and former employees, who asked not to, you know, be mentioned by name because who wants their knees broken, huh?
Right.
There are concerns about the device's roughly $3,000 price, doubts about its utility, and worries about its unproven market.
So the naysayers are already kicking in, criticizing the product even before it's announced.
Yeah.
Wesley Hilliard over at Apple Insider said it best, I think. In a tweet yesterday, Hilliard said, "Ah, yes, another Apple product deemed a failure before it is even announced. No way that similar predictions have been hilariously wrong before. Yep, Apple should just close up shop and stop trying. I don't know why they bother when people obviously don't want their products."
Right.
Irony aside, sarcasm aside, that's a really smart view of it, I think. There are so many people, Gurman kind of included, that are already calling this headset a flop before we even catch a glimpse of it. It's almost like they think that the higher-ups in Cupertino should just throw in the towel and say, all right, we've lost our touch. Maybe the guys who used to make BlackBerry could do better.
I hear what you're saying. No, I hear what you're saying. Here's the thing. I think there was actually some stuff in Gurman's piece that made sense. Okay?
There was. Yeah, there was.
I mean, this is sort of uncharted territory, and we'll actually go to whether it's really uncharted in a bit. Let's get through some of the other stuff first. I mean, because I don't really think that everything was negative. Like, I think it's a New York Times piece. Said Apple's headset is considered a bellwether for virtual and augmented reality, although troubling goes like Google Glass and Magic Leap and HoloLens from Microsoft and whatever, you know, Meta is calling it stuff this week.
Right.
With all that sort of in the rearview mirror, New York Times says Apple is considered a potential savior because of its success combining new hardware and software to create revolutionary devices. Still, they say the challenges are daunting. So they kind of stick their head above the water briefly to go, you know, this actually looks pretty good. And they're like, but here are all the things under the water that could get us.
When I was teaching in university, I was teaching first year English mm-hmm. to incoming freshmen. Mm-hmm. And we were taught that when we offered any criticism to their paper, mm-hmm. we needed to include it in a praise sandwich. So okay. the focus needed to be on the criticism, but we had to flank it with something good before and after.
I really like the quality of the paper you chose for this report. Now, your writing is terrible, but what color ink is that? That ink is like amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's about what I'm getting out of the New York Times.
I don't know. There's actually stuff. Let's talk. I think I alluded to this a moment ago. Let's talk about the possible trajectory for this thing.
Okay.
Because it talked about some of the stuff that it made it honestly sound. The New York Times piece made it sound less boring than Gurman tends to make it sound. There's an anticipated emphasis on co-presence, which is basically just, you know, a realistic, you know, Jeff talking to a relatively realistic Ken, I suppose, someplace. An emphasis on business applications and doubling as a tool for artists, designers, and engineers. They say version one of the headset may be for a select set of users with later versions geared for the general consumer. I can't remember if it was twice in the New York Times piece. No. It was in the New York Times piece and in the Gurman piece. And they said, think about it like Apple Watch. It wasn't really clear what Apple Watch was going to be to people. And I think it was the New York Times piece actually made the argument that Apple wasn't 100% certain. They put it out as kind of an extension of the iPhone. And then everybody was like, man, I love this for the heart thing and the running. And Apple's like, yeah, I know, right? We made a great fitness device. And okay. sort of pivoted over to, you know, leaning on the fitness side and the activity side. And of course, you know, the notification thing as well.
Yeah.
The idea, I mean, and we've heard this idea before, that the first round of these things, they're not going to sell well by Apple standards, by iPhone standards, by even right. Apple Watch standards. They're not going to sell huge the first round, but the first round is the sort of, you know, get your feet wet round. What did it take? 78 days. I think it took 78 days for Apple to sell its first million iPhones. Now, part of that was the fact that they had never made iPhones before, but the other part mm-hmm. of it was people going, "What? But I have a phone, right?"
Yeah.
It sort of, I mean, it took 78 days for Apple to sell the first million of those, and, you know, but now, I mean, they sell the first million 5 minutes after they open up right. orders for
right.
it. I mean, it's going to be a slower start, I think, than people are used to Apple things being, because they kind of forget that every Apple thing kind of starts slow and goes from there.
Yeah. And I don't have a problem with that sort of prediction. It's the continual talk, and, you know, maybe it's not so much the Times, but everyone else is saying, oh, this is going to be a flop. It's going to be a failure. And we haven't even seen it yet.
Right. And there's also, I mean, there's the thing that we talked about a week or two ago on this show about what a failure the iPhone 14 Plus is, even though the right. latest display information is indicating no, it isn't. And people will still talk about the fact that the iPhone 13 mini was a failure. Maybe it was the iPhone 12 mini. I can't remember which. One of those two ended up being a top 10 selling device in like all of smartphones for the year that it came out.
Yep.
But because we don't see it sell like the best thing that Apple has ever sold, then our assumption is that it's a failure. There was also the thing yeah. that you pointed out, that Gurman pointed out. Even if they only sell 500,000 to 1 million of these, they're going to end up leading the market in mixed reality within a few months.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to, even if this thing, quote, fails, end quote, it's probably going to be the biggest success that mixed reality has seen to the point that it comes out. There was yep. one other thing that I found really interesting, and I'm curious about the wording of it. The New York mm-hmm. Times piece quotes Carolina Milanesi. She's a consumer tech analyst for Creative Strategies, or Creative Strategies, if you like to enunciate. What she said is, Apple is always pretty good at coming into a market when the market is already established and changing that market. This is not the case for Apple VR and mixed reality. There's still a lot of learning. What Gurman said in Power On is, mixed reality, a category that melds augmented and virtual reality, is still a nascent area and far riskier than Apple's earlier attempts to establish new beachheads. With Mac, iPod, iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad, the company was essentially creating a better version of a product that people were familiar with. With the headset, Apple will have to explain to consumers why they'd want to own such a product at all. I don't think I agree with Melanesi, and I like creative strategies, and I respect her writing. Mm-hmm. I mean, what writing of hers that I've read, but I don't think there was a tablet market. I mean, there were tablets, but I don't feel like there was an established tablet market before iPad. And there were plenty of MP3 players, but I don't feel like there was an established MP3 player market before iPod.
Right.
There were lots of smartphones, but like really big businessmen and super nerds owned smartphones before the iPhone. Right. The devices existed, but I don't know that the market was there.
Yeah, they weren't really consumer friendly.
Yeah.
And I would almost say the same thing for the Apple Watch.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, yeah, there were a couple of smartwatches out before the Apple Watch, but nothing really notable and nothing that was really consumer friendly.
Yeah. I mean, there was the Fitbit, but that's not a watch, really.
That's it was not sort a watch.
It was a tracker. There was the Pebble, which was for nerds. And it was great from what I hear. I saw a couple of them, but it was for people who dreamed of a future where you had a smartwatch, mm-hmm. which, you know, came 10 minutes later once Apple released the Apple Watch. The one other thing that I will say to Gurman's thing, though, about with Mac, iPod, iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad, the company was essentially creating a better version of a product that people were familiar with. Mm-hmm. He's talking about the computer, the CD player, the regular flip phone, and like an analog watch, right? And a tablet. He's not talking about, well, so-and-so had a smartwatch, but then Apple, like, you know, really crushed them. It's more like people get watches, and so they're ready to go to a smartwatch. People get phones, so they're ready to go to a smartphone. People sort of got the, you know, home PC, and so they were ready for the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering then how hard a sell augmented reality or virtual reality are, because we all get reality.
Yeah.
I mean, you sort of get like, well, I think that's going to be down to developers, largely developers and the hardware. And, you know, obviously the price is going to be a big thing, but that's going to be a big thing. Well, according to everybody for the second one, I got my fingers crossed it's under $3,000 because I don't want to spend $3,000.
Right. Neither do I.
Yeah. Hey, coming up in just a moment, we have a pretty big Mailbag Monday on the way. But first, here at the Daily Observations, we don't just want to talk to you. We want to talk about you, about your business, about your nonprofit, about your app. Whether you've got a special event on the horizon or a special product, you know people would love if they heard about it. A great way for them to hear about it is by advertising on the Daily Observations. Backbeat Media has handled sales for this show since this show started. They know our numbers, they know our audience, but what they want to get to know is your business. How are you looking to grow? What kind of customers are you looking to reach? Backbeat has a lot of shows across many different demos and topics. They're not a clearinghouse for ads. They're a team of professionals looking to earn your trust, earn your business, and get you results. Find out more by visiting their site, backbeatmedia.com, B-A-C-K-B-E-A-T, backbeatmedia.com. And whatever you do, please tell them you heard about it on the Daily Observations, because that would, you know, help. Jeff Butts is with us today. He is the managing editor of the Mac Observer online at macobserver.com. Mailbag Monday, kind of amazing because not only are we remembering to do it on Monday, but there was mail in the mailbag.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Brian wrote into us saying, just a day after the TikTok congressional grilling and the loud anti-China rhetoric, we see the images of Apple CEO Tim Cook taking selfies with customers at an Apple store in China. So we haven't talked about this story here because it happened over the weekend. But I did do this for macOS Ken and for the Observation Deck. Basically, Apple CEO Tim Cook was in Beijing this weekend for the China Development Forum, stopped by Apple San Latun the day before to, you know, shake hands and talk to customers and talk to people who worked at the Apple store. Then he was one of very few U.S. execs that were at the China Business Summit, saying things like, oh, where are some of the quotes that we had? Apple and China grew together, and so this has been a symbiotic kind of relationship. We could not be more excited. He also said innovation is developing rapidly in China, and I believe it will further accelerate. He also talked about the need for education in the younger people, or for younger people. And he said that Apple plans to increase spending on its rural education program to 100 million yuan. That's $14.5 million U.S. And now we should actually get to what Brian said. Just wanted to make sure people knew what Brian was writing about. Jeff, will you please let people know what Brian had to say?
Yeah, Brian said that Cook's in-store appearance was the warm-up for his attendance at a high-profile summit of select business and government leaders. They are seeking solutions to the biggest supply chain and manufacturing disruptions they've ever faced. There couldn't be a more stark contrast to the political theater in Washington, where it was more about politics than results. Cook's presence, steady demeanor, and ability to navigate even these extreme international tensions are a powerful show of force from one of the best CEOs of all time. The importance of Apple jobs in China may well be an important factor in limiting the damage to the relationship between our countries. Apple fans and investors alike are better off because of his leadership. Cook may be the most important, albeit unofficial, diplomat due to his physical presence at this time of tension. It's a reminder not only of the good jobs Apple brings to the country, but the photos of average Chinese citizens are a literal show of support for the American brand of brands, Apple. Soft power is successful not in coercing outcomes, but co-opting the parties to a mutually acceptable outcome. And Cook may just be more important for the countries involved than just the company he so ably leads. So says Brian.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't disagree with this, but I also don't fully agree. Some of our contributors in the past have suggested that tech giants such as Apple should be more assertive in encouraging world governments to do the right thing. And I'm kind of on board with that. I would love to see Tim Cook tell China, we're going to pull back on how many jobs we create in your country until you start addressing all of these human rights violations your government is responsible for.
I don't disagree. I don't know, though, that you can pull back until you have a place or, you know, places to pull back to.
Well, they're developing those.
Right, right. India, Arizona, Vietnam, things like that. Like, if Apple goes right now and says, all right, do this or we're going to do this other thing. I mean, they can't do the other thing for a number of years now. I mean, it feels like every other day we're hearing about a new plant that somebody wants to open in India. There was a story that I don't remember if I did it for Mac OS X or not. I know I saw it. I might have saved it for Tuesday. But Pegatron is apparently looking to open another store, another factory in another section of India.
Yep, I saw that as well.
They're looking to grow quickly, but they're not grown enough yet that they can say to China, you know what? We don't need you. Because right now, they do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Charles also wrote into us. Thank you very much, Brian, for your email. Thanks, everybody. But if I forget to thank you personally, thanks. And thanks, Brian. Charles wrote in to address the Steve Jobs AI voice that Nick DeCorville and I were discussing last week. Personally, I thought it was uncanny and creepy since the voice, which sounds like the Steve Jobs most of us heard, draws on modern-day AI chat technology. So it can sound like Steve Jobs talking about this year's Oscars or COVID-19 or any number of things that have happened since Steve Jobs died in 2011. Jeff, would you please let people know what Charles had to say?
Yeah, Charles writes in, I agree that the voice as you played it has the vocal qualities of Steve Jobs, but I find the intonations are very particular, as if this particular AI model is based on Steve's appearances during the quarterly conference calls. It sounds very much like Steve reading scripted text rather than any of the more extemporized speech. An analogy would be comparing Ken Ray's intonations during macOS Ken to Ken's intonations during the daily observations. Same voice, different tones. I would find it interesting to see the Steve Jobs exercise modeled on his dialogues from the All Things D conferences instead and see how different it might be.
I do not understand Charles' reference to macOS Ken.
No, I don't either.
That could just be me. I don't know. Finally, today, under the heading Not Insufferable, Jerry writes in to say, anytime you find something new that brings you joy is a good time. No shame. Now, I've been joking, I hope anyway, about my growing sense of insufferability because I'm watching soccer these days. I actually watched Nashville this weekend because it was a free game. They lost. And you know what was weird? I still enjoyed the game.
Oh, well, good. I'm sorry they lost. But
yeah, me too. But it was a nail-biter. It was a 0-1, I'm sorry, 1-0 FC Cincinnati. Anyway, I'm watching soccer now, using a Chemex to do my pour-over coffee. I'm drinking my coffee with oat milk. And have I mentioned my year-long love affair with fountain pens? Picked up 3 more this weekend, by the way. Don't ask. Anyway, it was the soccer part that Jerry was responding to directly, but the sentiment in the first line, I think, bears repeating. Anytime you find something new that brings you joy is a good time. No shame. Jerry goes on to say, in the U.S., soccer used to be played only in some universities, so we thought it exotic and elitist. But in some countries, it's lower class than cricket, punsier than rugby. I've kicked around a ball made of tightly wound blue plastic bags with school kids in Africa. And that's the bottom line here. Having a blast running around a field, whacking at something big enough to hit with some regularity, and maybe learning to appreciate a sneaky nutmeg and argue about offsides. Okay, I understand the offsides thing. I don't understand the offsides thing, but I understand arguing about it.
Yeah.
Jerry continues, in my yearly birthday trip to a live game, there is a hugely diverse audience and food, and in our case, weather. The rainbow flags fly, the chants are in more than English, and I'm eating Indian food while the leaf blowers clear the snow from the pitch. And now Apple gives us more. Glad you're glad, says Jerry. Here's the thing. Like I said earlier, I hope I'm joking about being insufferable, but I really couldn't agree more with your sentiment. Provided it's not, you know, bad for anybody around you, if there's a thing you love and a thing you love to talk about, just, you know, revel, enjoy, share that thing and talk about that thing. Because first of all, you never know who you're going to meet. Second of all, you never know what you're going to learn. And finally, I think the world needs more of that.
Yeah. And you might just encourage someone to try something out that they might not have otherwise. You know, her talk about what she experiences at a soccer game has me thinking that maybe I should go to one and see for myself. And, you know, we do have, you know, here in Kansas City, we do have a major league soccer team.
What stinks is I think I might actually be in Nashville this summer, but I'm not going to be there over a weekend.
Oh.
Yeah. So unless it's one of the rare Wednesday night games, which I don't even know if those are actually happening or if I just made them up in my head. I don't think I'm going to get to see them, unfortunately, but, you know, maybe I'll drive by and buy a t-shirt anyway.
Oh, there you go.
If you have a question or a comment you want to send our way, maybe you want to get something in for the next Mailbag Monday, we would certainly love to hear from you. Our email address is observations@macobserver.com. Observations@macobserver.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter. We are at TMO Daily there. If you want to keep up with the stuff that I do for the Mac Observer, both the Daily Observations podcast and the Observation Deck turn up Monday through Friday on the site. Jeff, if people want to get in touch with you or just keep up with what you're doing, what ways would you suggest?
Well, you can email me at jeffb@macobserver.com. I'm on Twitter as @Clefmeister, and I run the @MacObserver Twitter account as well.
advertising handle by Backbeat Media, online at backbeatmedia.com. The Daily Observations is a production of the Mac Observer. From the latest news to how-tos, your source for Apple News is macobserver.com.